Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 1st of June. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
1st of June, Kev. Rabbits. June already. Can you believe it?
June. Another month and we're halfway through 2025. Yep, it flies by. Life continues on and we seem to be having some life in the markets, but we'll talk about that a bit later.
Yeah, I mean, what's your week look like? Obviously, it's half term over here with the kids have been off, but both have got exams when they return. So it's been sort of like hard at the revision. Day out in Oxford on Friday, which is just absolutely beautiful. I just love the city of Oxford, all the buildings, you know, the Bodleian Library, the Magdalen College. And I couldn't, the film I saw Wonka recently, and they used a lot of the sort of backdrops of all the amazing architecture in the film. And you realise just how stunning it is actually, and how much history is there. We're very lucky to have these beautiful cities on our doorstep, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just been bloody hot here, to be honest with you. 40 degrees, I think it was, on Tuesday. Wow. Been in the pool two or three times. Cool off in the afternoons. But I've been very, very busy, actually, to be honest. I've been talking to CEOs. There's a lot of activity out there. A lot of things going on. And obviously, we had the bank holiday Monday. And we had the sort of man who lost the plot and drove his car through all the Liverpool fans, which was a lot has come out about that since then. This guy's an ex-Marine. 53 years old, three children, good job, everything else. I think he lost the plot because he thought he was going to get killed.
Yeah, I think that's what happened as well. So, yeah, obviously that the news on the 27th of May that Paul Doyle, 53, as you said, drove into Liverpool FC Victory Parade, injuring 79 people, including four children, charged with dangerous driving and GBH, suspected of attempted murder and drug driving, which is interesting because, as you say, he's an ex-commando, isn't he, with obviously real presence in the military. He actually worked for Rathbones, didn't he? It came out, one of the big financial institutions. So, you know, as you say, he was an upstanding citizen. I think when they interviewed his friends, he said they were all obviously shocked. But I think when you look at the videos, absolutely, as you say, he went down, maybe took the wrong turning, realised he was, you know, people were trying to get at him because he was, you know, he was in the wrong place and he just panicked.
Yeah, it certainly looks like that. I don't know whether he took the wrong turn and we'll never know, I suppose, but he basically chased an ambulance, didn't he, down that way. So he went through a blockade, whether by purpose or not, maybe we'll never know. But if you see the videos, even I was a Liverpool supporter, I'm appalled by the whole thing, obviously. But
it took a shine off it, that's for sure, didn't it?
It did. But the reality of the situation looks very much like, you know, somebody nearly got hit and then took offence to him nearly getting hit. Then he threw something at the car. The window got smashed. Then the guy carried on trying to move closer, but he must have been scared stiff. You can imagine all of those people around.
They were trying to get in the car at that point, weren't they?
No, that was a few seconds later then, like 30 seconds later then, somebody opened the door and tried to get in and he closed the door. And then he sped up, didn't he? And that's where most of the people got injured. Injuries were pretty slight, to be honest.
Unfortunately, they when the vehicle stopped, I don't know if you know, but they had to lift, the fire engine had to lift, the car was on top of four bodies, which is just devastating. You know, there was three people under the vehicle.
I'm aware of that. Again,
the thing that I got,
luckily nobody's died.
Yeah.
But you said it was drugs, right? But when the things that he was accused of came out again yesterday, there was no drug thing in it.
Okay. Well, all the media here is reporting drug driving, but anyway, they've not named whether it's, you know, what particular drug it is, and there's been a bit of an uproar. Yeah. But one thing I noticed, and I really want to make this sort of point, is when the news broke on this, within 2 hours, the Liverpool Metro or the Liverpool Police made a big statement, didn't they, making aware that it was a 53-year-old white male that had done it. Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of lessons learned based on the Southport killings, where all the media and all the social media went mad, and there was people accusing. In fact, there were even posts on this one saying it was the wrong people and naming people, you know, religious groups that were involved in it. So that they needed to quash that. So I think they handled it extremely efficiently, this one.
Yeah, you can almost argue they were being racist by saying that it was a white male because they wanted to play it down, obviously. But there was stories that there were people identified as the person who was driving the car in Liverpool. There was one guy in Heighton, which is where I was born, and he had to come out on social media and say, "I'm here. It wasn't me," because the guy's in custody. But he's in custody, appearing in court, I think, on Friday, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I have sympathy for him, to be honest, even though I'm annoyed at that it happened. But I see that it was a horrific situation. He's an idiot, basically. Shouldn't have been there. Just
No, but
shouldn't have
do
been
you
there.
think that the police handled it well in terms of like when they surrounded the vehicle? Because they were obviously very, very worried that this was going to turn to a murder involved in, if some of the Liverpool fans were if they'd have got hold of him, I'm pretty convinced they would have, this guy would have been dead if the police hadn't have been there. He would have been pulled out and beaten to death. I
He
have
would have
no
been,
doubt.
he certainly would have been very seriously injured because they were baying for him, weren't they? They were baying for him, and that wasn't good. But I suppose that's just unfortunately the
And as you
way of
say,
the
it's a
world.
miracle. Thank, thoughts and prayers to the victims. And that no, I just can't believe no one died in it. And that's an absolute blessing. So fair play. They handled
Yeah.
it.
Well,
They
it
had the
tells you because
ambulance.
of the speed of the vehicle, and else it was going to be that way, wasn't it? So yeah.
Okay, let's have a look
Yeah,
at.
and it definitely took the shine off it because if you look at the supposedly there was 1.5 million people there, but I mean, let's say a million even. How many fans have you got? Like, that's incredible. And the singing and the atmosphere and everything else, even though the weather wasn't great, it was amazing.
You
Amazing,
didn't have a
amazing to
chance to
watch and amazing to see.
properly celebrate your first premiership because of lockdown. So this was a real celebration.
Yeah. First premiership, that was number 19, mate. Don't
No, I
worry
mean
about. Don't worry about the names.
the Premiership, mate, the Premier League, not the old
Yes.
Division One. But so what do we make of Trump as well? Because there's been a big development on the fact that the US court has blocked Trump's plans for a 10% tariff on all imports with an appeal plan for the 30th of May. The IMF warns of UK economic risk despite Bank of England's growth forecast. The UK-US trade deal talks falter with criticism of Keir Starmer's rushed approach. So what do we make of the fact that this US court are potentially blocking him?
Well, the system's biting back, isn't it, really, in a way? And in my view, rightly so. I mean, he was very, very, I don't even know the right word. What was he? He was very rash in what he did. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, the rule of law will be there, and it really probably is the only check and balance that's on him at the minute. Would he get it through the House and through the what's the other thing? The House of Representatives and the Senate. Would he get it through the House of Representatives and the Senate? I think probably, but you never know because there was a few dissenters for sure. But yeah, it puts Trump in a very weak position, let's be honest, doesn't it? Because like Europe's sitting there going, "Oh, your court's telling you can't do this." China's also probably sitting there going, "Your court's telling you can't do this." Yeah, the market's basically gone up on the basis that it thinks the chances are these aren't actually going to be continued. And I think that would be a savior for Trump, to be honest with you. Because if
I
those
think so.
tariffs in general had continued, I think you're going to import inflation into the US. Your bond market is going to be in a terrible situation. What it has done is it's damaged the US dollar long term. I'm convinced of this.
Sure. What do
That's
you
it,
make of
really.
this? Do you know what taco means? Did you see
Yeah,
this?
yeah.
Trump always chickens out. This is a new Wall Street acronym coined by the Financial
Did
Times
you see
column.
his reaction when he was told about it?
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? But basically, it describes a trading strategy, where investors buy stocks at the lower prices after Trump announces tariffs, anticipating that it'll back off, allowing markets to recover. And all the memes and the mockery, as you say, Taco Trump, and he's publicly rejected this chickening out label, as you say, insisting he's firm on tariffs. The phrase has gained traction on X, with posts both criticizing and amplifying it, though some warn it could provoke more aggressive tariff policies. I love that. I mean, it's a great little meme, isn't it? But other than that, I mean, there's been a few bits obviously going on in the UK. We've talked about that. Obviously, the other one in the US is the Elon Musk's, his US exit. He left his DOGE, or Department of Government Efficiency, role on the 29th of May after cutting $150 billion from a $2 trillion target. He also criticized Trump's tax bill, And, you know, UK media noted this due to Musk's X influence. So what do you make of him going? I mean, it was always going to go, but I think a lot of the anti-Musks have been critics of his brief tenure and saying that his X influence has potentially destabilized not only UK kind of politics, but also German and European politics.
Yeah, it's a real difficult one. I think he's now trying to distance himself, something that he put himself right in the middle of, which is a difficult thing to do, no matter what you just say. I mean, the Doge thing, he took some stick. I think he's, from what I heard, he's still involved with Doge, but not as much as he was. In terms of the other things, as in being like very close with Trump and trying to help Trump. He openly said this week that he won't be involved in politics anymore unless he sees a need for it, and that's it. I think he's basically been told by the people in the know in both X and Tesla, whatever other companies he's got, that he's got to back away, otherwise he's going to destroy the companies.
Yes, but he's publicly criticised him on the tariffs because he's affected, you know, all of the parts, the key parts for Tesla, which come in from Japan and China. You know, they're massively impacted by that. So, do you think it's kind of like that? We said the bromance would wear off, but do you think it's because it's affecting his own business and his share, you know, his holdings from a purely selfish point of view?
Probably most people are. Well, it's not even just him personally, is he? He's got so much money that it's not going to make much difference, even if Tesla, not goes to nothing, but is pushed down a lot.
Yeah.
It's more the impact to everybody else that has invested or is part of the whole organization. They're going to be giving him crap on him.
He's meddled too much in politics as well. I mean, you look at the way that his, you know, a lot of the Tesla dealerships have been firebombed all around Europe and in the US as well. So he's just become too divisive. I think it's as simple as that. Anyway, let's move on to our first guest this week. Today we're joined by Peter Krugel, CEO of Mast Energy Developments. Welcome back to the podcast, Peter.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we saw the recent news that the company has secured a two-stage funding package worth up to £5 million to support its growth and ongoing project. Stage one involves a £350,000 interest-free convertible loan from Big Sky Management to provide immediate working capital, while stage two comprises a £4.65 million equity fundraise via prepaid and cash warrants, conditional on shareholder approval for a 40-to-1 share consolidation and other resolutions at a forthcoming general meeting. The company believes this financing will underpin expansion towards its 300-plus megawatt production goal. Peter, you emphasise the strategic importance of the funding and investor enthusiasm following recent successes at Pybridge and Hindlip. The fundraise includes restrictions on investor ownership levels and provisions for participation in future capital raises. Sounds like real progress, Peter. So please tell us more.
Yes, thank you for that overview, Phil. That's spot on. We've been working on this deal for quite a while. Apart from, the ongoing positive progress and successes at our projects, most notably at Pybridge and then more recently at Hindlip, we've been looking for a funding solution for PLC, which we've now found. And this financing package, has got a few key objectives. First and foremost, it gives us a war chest in order to expedite our growth strategy and to get as much megawatts in production as quickly as possible. It also would essentially mean that the PLC balance sheet is going to be debt-free following the completion of this funding deal, which we believe is also important. We've been carrying a bit of historic debt up to now, which has been a bit of a drag and a deterrent for investors at PLC level. That's going to be resolved. It's also going to introduce new and fresh capital and investors to our share register, which we believe will increase the enthusiasm. So I think across the board, this is a very big step forward for us in a long time, and we're very excited about it.
So, Peter, it must be a relief having worked through these last sort of 12, 18 months. And, Mast has been in a situation where it desperately needed cash to produce the returns that you knew were there. So, how do you feel?
Yes, I feel relieved, Kevin, to be honest. I feel grateful. I feel excited. As you say, we've been working very hard the past 12 to 18 months. We turned a very difficult corner. We started making good and solid progress at the start of last year. you know, that expedited and grew into something really tangible and solid, first with Firebridge and then with Hindlip. And I think this financing package is testament to our progress and positive news flow up to now.
So from the point of view of the creditors within the PLC, what's going to happen when this money comes in? Then
yes, the PLC, essentially the objective is that the PLC balance sheet would be debt-free, but significant shareholdings in the underlying projects, being Hindlip, Bordesley and Stather. You know, we're also looking to grow our asset base with organic and inorganic growth, acquisitions, etc. So just putting the PLC balance sheet on a very solid footing. But the details of that we'll announce when we complete the funding arrangement, which is planned around in June at this stage, because as Phil mentioned a bit earlier, the funding is conditional on a few elements, being a general meeting that we're planning to arrange and announce shortly, as well as shareholder approval and a prospectus. So we'll announce all the details in due course.
Okay. And so in terms of the Pybridge situation, that debt is still going to be there. Once you've cleaned the balance sheet, do you intend to then refinance Pybridge to make it more efficient?
Yes.
In terms of the financial side of things, Aaron?
Yeah. So the financing arrangements at the various projects will remain unaffected and unchanged. So this funding package is specifically at PLC level for PLC. The funding arrangements at the project levels remain unchanged. So for Pybridge, we've got the funding arrangement with Riverfort. That remains unchanged and unaffected. We will continue to assess Pybridge and determine what the best next step there is, which might include a refinancing with a commercial bank. Hindlip, same story. Our funding arrangement there with Powertree remains the same and unaffected.
And does it mean that the third gen set in Pybridge almost certainly going to get done now because it makes financial sense to do it?
Yes, absolutely. It remains part of our planning. And yeah, it's going to be a next step at Pybridge, certainly.
These guys are obviously putting their money where their mouth is, £5 million, and obviously warrants applicable to put the same in again twice by the looks of things. So how quickly do you think you can get to that 20, 30, 40, 50 megawatts in production now that you have the financial wherewithal to do it?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Kevin. So, I mean, we've already lined up potential options, which we will execute as and when the funding comes in. So I think it's just a question of what we do first and timing. Our planning is to add megawatts in production to our portfolio this year already. So kind of by the end of the year, having increased that number, I don't know exactly how much by now. It's a bit too early for that, but that's the exciting part. You know, that's the positive news flow that we'll start putting out once this funding comes in. So I think a very exciting second half of the year that's waiting for us.
There was quite a strong statement in the RNS, actually. I was reading it, and it, you know, it says, I think, something along the lines of that the investors expect that, having, you know, invested sufficient capital to advance that business strategy, the company's share price and liquidity will improve significantly. And accordingly, you know, the investors then expect to see demand for the company's shares and then be able to exercise their warrants. I mean, it sounds like quite a strong positive statement. If only it were that easy, Peter.
Yeah, that's a good point, Phil. And I mean, this investor group, you know what they're doing. They're very well experienced, and they would have not entered into this funding arrangement with us if they weren't confident that, you know, we're able to deliver on our growth strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, it must be good to see. I mean, I know your share price a year ago or so was probably less than the value of the shell, if you like, which was £250,000 or so, to now see a market cap of probably somewhere in the region of 3 million. You know, where can this go in terms of its ability to grow to 300 megawatts, which has always been the story from many years back, if you like, when it was first listed? How likely do you now think that is going to happen?
I think this funding package is a very important part of the steps going forward. So it has been and remains a key step for us to be able to grow our portfolio of megawatts in production. So I think the likelihood has increased significantly now. I think we've been making progress across the board the past 12 months and shown that we can do this, that we can do it well. And I think that's starting to show results. I really think this is a next step in a long line of steps that's going to get bigger. And the nature of this business is that it grows exponentially. So I'm very excited about the time ahead of us.
So the scenario is that in maybe 12 months' time, this could be seen as a small deal.
That's the hope. And we can already see that. So part of this financing deal is we've got the prepaid warrants of £5 million. That's guaranteed to come in when we close the deal planned around in June at this stage. And then there's the 2-for-1 cash warrants, which is an additional up to £10 million. You know, so that's already 15. And I mean, if this deal goes well, yeah, I really think that we'll look back on this and say that was a small deal.
Very good. Good luck, and I hope it continues. I mean, you've done a cracking job in the last 12 months to bring it around from, I won't go so far as to say shipwreck, but it wasn't far off, as you would probably admit now, to where we are now. We've gone from a share price of 0.1. One, two, maybe even less than that at some points, to now 0.7-ish as we record this. So, yeah, well done. You must be one of the best performers on the market.
Yes, yeah, no, it's been hard work, Kevin, and a lot of hard work still lies ahead, but we're fully committed. And as I said a few times now, I'm really excited about the time ahead of us and coming back with even bigger positive news.
Okay, on that note, we'll say Peter Krugel, CEO of Mast Energy Developments. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Kevin.
Cheers, Peter.
Let's move on to our second guest this week. We're delighted to be joined by Daniel G, Priority AI founder. Welcome back to the podcast, Dan. How's life treating you?
Life is very good, very busy. All the better for being with you guys this morning.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously just saw the news that the company has expanded its payment options to include Bitcoin and other stable coins via a partnership with Coinbase Commerce, enhancing convenience for crypto native customers. The move reflects the company's commitment to innovation, opens new revenue streams, and supports a broader digital strategy. Dan, you noted the integration aligns with evolving market trends and positions Priority to benefit from the growing role of cryptocurrencies in business. The company has already received its first Bitcoin payments and adopted a Bitcoin treasury policy to manage its holdings for a long-term shareholder value. Let's start with the big news, Dan. Priority is now accepting Bitcoin. What drove this decision and why now?
This is very much a customer-led decision. I think it's important to note that as we grow the business, we're speaking to more and more SMEs, small businesses in the UK, and obviously we've recently announced in the US as well. And those customers are very neat. One of those needs is a more diverse range of payment options, including cryptocurrency. And as the RNS kind of rightly states, we have received our first customer payments in cryptocurrency within 24 hours of launching that solution. So it's, I guess, the proof's in the pudding there that we've given our customers a wider variety of options to pay for our products and services, and they're using it, which is, you know, a massive tick in the box for us. And ultimately, it opens up to a wider audience of customers that are probably adopting their own treasury strategies around Bitcoin and left with this cryptocurrency on their balance sheet that they'd like to make some use out of. And so we're really just kind of molding to customer requirements in an ever-changing market.
Yeah, absolutely. And was there a specific, you know, customer demand or market signal that kind of, you know, pushed you to explore this crypto integration?
This is a kind of an integration that we've explored several times over the last 4 to 5 years across a variety of businesses that James and I have run, with kind of varying degrees of actual kind of embedding the technology into the operations. For this, I think if we look at the landscape and as a management team, we needed to address the growing number of companies adopting strategies around cryptocurrency and actually the adoption of it as a mainstream use of funds. So realistically, we wanted to be able to address a wider range of audiences, give access to a kind of a wider network of customers, and that includes people that are crypto native, which is, you know, especially looking at some of the younger founders that we speak to and see every day, they are probably more crypto native than fiat native. So we wanted to be able to reduce the amount of barriers of entry of purchasing our products. So clicking online, using our Coinbase Commerce Gateway, paying in Bitcoin, Ethereum, or one of 100 other cryptocurrencies is appealing to a wide number of people. And that number of people is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Coinbase Commerce, you know, one of the bigger sort of crypto brokers. Just walk us through how that integration works and, you know, what it means for your users.
So it's all about user experience. So everything we're doing, we're actually just about to go live on a new website. And it's all about kind of reducing the amount of clicks to purchase for our customers, getting their models deployed as quickly as possible, getting their agents deployable on socials, on their websites. If they've selected the generative platform, getting them up and generating as quickly as possible. So it's integrated in our existing interface. So when you go through that customer onboarding journey, a couple of the clicks, we're taking the information. A lot of that is collecting information for training data for us to go and build your model. When you're presented with a payment gateway, you'll see your range of options, and they will be currently either bank transfer, a subscription payment, which is provided by a payment gateway provider, which is Stripe. And then you'll have another link in there, which will open up that gateway into Coinbase Commerce. Couple of clicks, add your wallet address, and you're in effect set to go. So very, very similar to a traditional kind of sterling or dollar payment gateway. The user experience is exactly the same. The only difference is that we're receiving a cryptocurrency into our wallet address with our prime broker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a real buzz recently of companies that are kind of, it feels like if they've put the measure or the mention of Bitcoin treasury in their RNSs, that they've done, you know, X number of 100% increases on you know, in a week or even a month. You know, even the success of MicroStrategy or Strategy in the US, who've had a big success. You mentioned this Bitcoin treasury policy in the RNS. You know, how do you plan to manage and potentially grow those holdings in the future?
Well, I think, you know, and we're talking about the wider market and some of the news that we've kind of seen, which we are aware of. And I think if we look at some of the kind of the earlier movers like Smarter Web Company, fantastic company, done really, really well for investors and running a good operation. We're very much following that strategy of listening to our customers and the tail not wagging the dog. So they integrated the payment gateway to allow their customers to pay in cryptocurrency, including Bitcoin, for their services. That then progressed into a treasury management policy as they grew their reserves. Naturally, customers paying, you're going to be increasing those reserves. As I've already said, we have customers paying in Bitcoin. As more pay, we will be growing our reserves organically. We have put a treasury management policy in place to stipulate the long-term value of holding cryptocurrency as a company and the increased stakeholder value, and also how much exposure we accept to that on our balance sheet, how much is in stablecoin, how much is in Bitcoin, how much is in fiat. So that policy will, in effect, govern any money that's on our balance sheet as we grow, as our revenues and profitability increases.
Hi, Dan. So from the perspective of Bitcoin and the business, you're saying that you can hold between 25% and 49% in Bitcoin of money that is not going to be used for cash flow, basically. Is that fair to say?
So yeah, we have a percentage within our treasury management policy, which will be allocated distributable reserves. So in effect, free cash flow as a long-term holding of Bitcoin.
Very good. And how's the business going in general? I mean, because obviously the business isn't going to be just Bitcoin, but obviously as this cash flow increases, you're going to be more and more of a play on crypto as well as the SaaS business that you are.
I mean, this is a string to the bow, Kev, completely right. This isn't the entire bow. So we are an operating company. We are an AI software company, software as a service, one of the few on AIM, obviously recently floated back end of last year. Business is good. Customer numbers growing in line with expectations, as is revenue. A lot more larger project work. Obviously, we announced the Leukemia Care project, which has excitingly developed into some conversations with Amazon around their Imagine grant and actually working a lot more closely in the charity sector, which is really, really exciting. And it feels like doors continue opening every single day. A lot of the work we're doing is referral based from our customers who are introducing us to other SMEs. And I guess that is what we really intended when we first set up the business, is leveraging community. Which is one of our kind of our early slogans, community powered growth, a community of SaaS founders and kind of small company founders to actually use the product, like it, see value, and say to kind of friends within their network and their peer group, say, hey, you should be using this. Why aren't you using AI within your business? Why aren't you using agents? Why aren't you using generative AI? So that's really good for our cost of acquisition for customers. It keeps our CPA very low down, but also it means that we're kind of spread across a wide variety of sectors. So we don't have that sector risk that some traditional SaaS businesses do. We're working in food and bev, direct to consumer, business to business, music and hospitality, sport, obviously partnering with interesting companies like Halfspace, award-winning companies, which opens up a whole new realm of customers to us.
So People have put it to me, because obviously you've come to the market and our share price hasn't performed in terms of the price that you came. They're basically saying that you're not doing anything different than a bot is doing. So I'm giving you your right of reply. How are you not just a wrapper for AI? What is the difference?
The difference is the data that sits within that. So AI is, you know, an agent, and generative AI is determined in terms of its kind of X series value by the data that's in it. And we've always said LLMs, fantastic, trillions of parameters and growing. However, for small business use, the more parameters makes them less and less usable, because we have very, very acute needs. Obviously, the Sunday roast, you run a business. In priority, we run our own business. And what I don't want is hallucinations around training parameters that aren't relevant to me. So actually, for us going in and building those training parameters, we create a really, really kind of reliable and usable interface for customers. I guess the real secret sauce is that feedback loop. When you go into our more expensive products, where actually the community data starts to impact the training data. What we mean by that is the more that you create on our platform, whether you're generating Instagram posts, whether you're releasing RNSs, maybe you're writing LinkedIn blogs, or you're creating internal management documents, people's responses and interactions with those documents feed back into the training data. We're marking our own homework there. If you're releasing Instagram content, it does really, really well. Okay, actually, the algorithms that we're using in the back end are identifying what's doing well about that post. What's the difference between that post and the post you did last week? Is it hashtagging? Is it the time of day? All those parameters are going into our training data and impacting for that individual user. So actually, every single user is getting their own genuine experience, which is being curated, not by them, but actually by their community and their stakeholders around them. So it's really exciting. Think public companies with bulletin boards, ADVFN, LSEs. Think of consumer cyclical brands with, you know, Trustpilot, TripAdvisors, all these different community boards, Reddits. All of that data is coming in to actually impact how that platform performs on a daily basis, actually on a granular basis, every 45 to 50 seconds. So we're identifying trends. So it's a reactive product, as opposed to traditional LLMs, which obviously, you know, sadly, we don't get to impact those trillion parameters of training data within a Gemini or an Anthropic or any OpenAI products, because they're just too mass market. For our products, actually, you've got the autonomy and the ownership of that training data, and it's all within your grasp and reach to actually control how it's used.
And how will you protect that? So how will you protect that market? In other words, the clients that you have?
But the data protects itself. And so we use what we call a data moat around the product, which is, you know, from inception, and we're a relatively young company, probably knocking on 3 years now. Data has always been one of the biggest features of our product, one of our most valuable assets, sitting and identifying who's the data processor, who's the data controller. All of that first party training data and all the data that we're collecting from those users is sitting on platform. And as you've got active subscriptions, you've got the ability to engage with that data. Maybe it's, you know, running an event. You guys have been somewhere events. Maybe it's collecting information on potential stakeholders, investors, brand partners, etc. You can engage with that data on platform. It all goes into feeding your model, your training data for your model. As long as you've got an active subscription on that platform, you can use that to your heart's content. The second you come off the platform, we sit with the data within our repository. However, the user loses access to that data. So you're incentivized. It's a really useful product. It's fantastic. The bigger your community, the more data you have. Brilliant. Tick, tick, tick. But you need to stay on the platform to actually get some use out of that data. It isn't an unsubscribe and an export data and you can ride off into the sunset to a new provider. As one of the first movers in this space, especially in the public markets, we're already amassing hundreds of millions of parameters of training data on a wide variety of companies, both public and private.
You're the people then who, when you get your Skybox and you unsubscribe, you haven't got any of the content anymore.
You take all your channels away. Unfortunately, that's not our fault. You have to speak to Sky on that one, Kev.
No, but any of the recordings as well, you don't get. Anyway, regardless of that, the scenario then is, you mentioned, you slipped it in there about the charity thing. And Amazon, tell us a little bit more about that.
So we're a Google startup. So we're a Google certified startup. We have been since, I think, 2023, 2022. So very, very early stages when we first set up the company. Google wrapped their arm around us. Fantastic. Provided us with great support and funding. We have recently been in discussions with Amazon regarding some of their products and services. Obviously, you saw we announced we're a part of the NVIDIA partner program. and we'll be attending some of the NVIDIA events with Jensen Huang in June over in Europe, which will be exciting for the team to go and meet. But, you know, we're having constant discussions. Amazon Imagine Grant is a grant specifically focused on the charity sector. The leukemia care deal, six-figure revenue deal for us, so quite big, but also very big for the team at Leukemia Care as one of the first charities to actually integrate artificial intelligence into their digital strategy in the line with an entire brand and website overhaul. So big project for us, lots of responsibility, but that has attracted the attention of Amazon, the Imagine Grant. So we're in discussions with Leukemia Care and Amazon around grant funding for Leukemia Care and how some of the work that we're doing could access some greater financing options for Leukemia Care as a charity, which is super exciting. And obviously will appeal to probably a wider range of charities that, you know, biggest problem I've worked in the charity sector off and on for the last 5 to 6 years. Funding is, as you can guess, one of the biggest hurdles to kind of overcome. So anything that can help that is going to garner, you know, a reasonable amount of attention. And we're more than happy to help.
Are you going to be in a situation where you could be the go-to place for charities, certainly in the UK initially, to help them to effectively raise more money? Because I think that's ultimately the plan, isn't it? That's what the charity wants to do, is to raise more money and more awareness of what they're doing.
I think, you know, the strategy that we always adopted is we wanted to be sector agnostic as a technology business. We wanted to go where our impact was most widely felt. We've explored the charity sector and post Leukemia Care, we've had lots of discussions with other charities about implementing our technology, our solutions, and some custom solutions as well. And I think for us, it's about delivering best-in-class service, hitting the mandate that we've been given with the project, obviously over a couple of phases. If we're delivering that, I think your reputation probably speaks for itself. You know, project management calls every single week with the team, and the feedback is fantastic. So for me, it's great to see. And as we deliver best in class results, I think you naturally have customers come to you. And, you know, in effect, the best kind of referrals you get are from people actually paying for your service.
Yeah. And even if they don't pay in Bitcoin, what you're basically saying is that nearly 50% of your treasury will be held in Bitcoin anyway. So it's not all about people paying you in Bitcoin.
So the Bitcoin payment is a gateway. It's an option for our customers to pay. Every customer has a choice how they pay, whether that's fiat, whether it's dollars, whether it's Bitcoin, Ethereum. Our treasury management policy denotes how we will hold our Bitcoin as we accumulate it from revenue and other sources on our balance sheet. So that is a varying number based on the treasury management policy. There's a treasury management policy within our admission document. So this is just an addendum to that. So it's not a complete lift and shift. It is, I guess, a development or a progression of our treasury management policy based on what our customers need.
So anyone else on AIM doing this?
I'll probably get a call from the Nomad in the back of that one. I, to the best of my knowledge, is the political answer. To the best of my knowledge, I don't believe there's another AIM company with a treasury management policy. I don't know, don't check the market out every day. So we've got an amazing board of directors on Topco that do that. But from my knowledge, standard list Aquis, yes, AIM companies, I haven't seen another with a treasury management policy. For us, it was just a natural progression for our business. It was the right time, the right thing for us to do.
Great. Well, good luck. And hopefully in the next week or two, we're going to be speaking to you anyway. You've got your interims coming out shortly as well, and we'll see how you get on.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll say Daniel G, Priority AI founder. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Cheers, guys. Catch you later.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. I make Iconic Labs. Icon is the ticker. Some 250% increase on the week. We mentioned them last week. Also, Blue Star Capital up 180%. That was after reports that its investee Satoshi Pay's decentralized exchange platform Vortex has reached $1 million in transaction volume since launching in Europe and Brazil, with over $500,000 processed in May 2025 alone. Vortex enables low-cost stablecoin to fiat conversions via partners and Pendulum infrastructure, supporting blockchains like Ethereum, Polygon, and Polkadot. I'll tell you what, Kev, all these kind of like payment systems and stablecoin and Bitcoin treasury stocks have done really, really well this week, haven't they? When you look at like all of the movers, that have done the 100, 200%ers, you know, they're like the Cell AIs, the Cycles done well, have really been based on the common theme running through them, as we talked about with Dan there, is the fact that it's all related to, you know, Bitcoin treasury, meme coins, stable coins, payment systems.
Yeah, it seems to be the theme of the year. or not of the year, but of the last few months, certainly having some storage of Bitcoin. We had the SWC on Aquas, which has done 40 times or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's probably not strictly true. It's done 40 times, but
2.5p to a pound, whatever that is. I mean, it's probably 30x, isn't it? Or something like that.
No, it is 40x, 2.5 to a pound, but that was pre-IPO, IPO 5p, I think it was. Was it? Anyway, it's done a hell of a lot. We're still in a situation where Bitcoins that they hold are worth like maybe $1 million. But they obviously see a way, go back to the market, raise money, and buy more Bitcoin, go back to the market, raise money, buy more Bitcoin, so on and so forth. I don't know if SWC are going to do that again, but certainly the last money they raised, they're about to buy Bitcoin again. I think any of these companies, people are seeing this as a real store of wealth for the future. And the more and more uptake of it is supply and demand, isn't it? What way is Bitcoin going to go if at the end of the day, the big money, and certainly it's been pushed by Trump, hasn't it? The big money is going to go into Bitcoin or whatever other currency, Ethereum or whatever else cryptocurrency you're going to go into. So I can see it only continuing, to be honest. I think anyone who's going to be coming out now, buying more Bitcoin, there's going to be more cash available. I mean, put it this way, if you're in SWC now and you've just had 20 bags or 30 bags or whatever it happens to be, and someone else comes out and does it and they have a small market cap, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're probably going to switch some of your money into the one that's just about to start to do the same thing. So I don't see anything but that likely to happen, you know, whether it gets to the what I see as extreme values, other people don't, but what I see as extreme values, I don't know. But let's see what happens. You know, I think from what you've said about the way the market's moved, we for 2 years have not had any of these type of moves for any stocks. You know, if you look at MAST, how much has MAST moved last week?
Oh, I mean, the week I've got 170, currently on Friday, it's 170% up on the week. But if you look at it from, I'm looking at the 52-week stats here now.
Yeah.
The low was 0.115 on the 23rd of July, and the current high is 0.98. Yeah. So you work that out, it's 800% nearly.
Yeah, no, and I tipped it as one of my stocks of the year at 0.17 in January. And there you go. I think it's up 450% from that. So, you know, it was a big risk. And we all know that it was a big risk even when I tipped it, because I think both you and Charles looked at me as if I was crazy. But it was a big risk, but we knew they'd made advancements.
Yeah.
And now they've made advancements. They've got cash from Powertree. And now they've got cash that's actually in the PLC, which is going to free them up completely. I mean, obviously, it still has to go through the prospectus situation, but I mean, that's going to be a given because people want this money to come in. And you're going to have 5 million, then that's going to be probably recycled, 5 million more, recycled, 5 million more, recycled. And they're already going to be up.
Yeah, and they've got the 40-to-1 consolidation that's going to be, you know, will be pushed through. Well, you know, that as per the RNS, so there's going to be obviously some consolidation.
So it's going to go to 40p basically if it gets to the penny here, which is looking very likely. There's a lot of people who are interested in this, and I think Peter is a very sensible guy. I think he's got his head on his shoulders. Will he achieve the 300 megawatts? Yes. If he has the cash available to do it. And that was always the situation. So once you put water on a plant that is nearly dying, then it's got a chance of living again. And that's basically what's happened. The idea was never a bad one, but it needed cash. And it's got the cash, you know, we're moving forward. So what do you think about Priority One now after their announcement today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's we just talked with Dan, and you know, the news is interesting. Payment on Bitcoin, obviously, you know, and obviously that enables them to have more flexibility. It sounds like they've already got payments coming into that treasury, And ultimately, yeah, I mean, it is the way, isn't it? As I say, we've talked about that. Smarter web companies doing extremely well. Obviously, when Bitcoin's high, it's great. It's great news. I mean, it's very current. You know, if Bitcoin drops off the boil a bit, then obviously that treasury would reduce. So obviously, there's a little bit of a kind of not a risk, but a trade-off, isn't there, based on the value of Bitcoin at that time. It's always pinned to that value.
Yeah, it depends what you think is going to happen to Bitcoin. I actually think Bitcoin's going to continue to go up, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think in the long term, I think if you look at short-term fluctuations, absolutely. I think there's every potential that in the next 5 years, Bitcoin could be $500,000.
Yeah, and peak higher as well. I mean, there's no saying it won't be. I don't really agree with that. And if you listen back to podcasts we've had, we're like, it's the king's new clothes. It is. But it is no different than fiat currency in that respect, because ultimately that's backed by nothing as well. So yeah, let's see where it all goes in the end. I mean, while we move on to other things like Conroy Gold has moved up this week again. I think people are starting to realize there's something going on there. They're going to hopefully start to get a deal, especially as they had that money invested there with a 10p option on it. It's, I think, 5p was paid this week. I can see, you know, that's going to break out if anything is announced. I don't genuinely know whether anything is announced or will be announced, but I still believe in that long term. The gold is in the ground. It's, again, it's the same analogy as mass. If you've got the money, then the value is going to be is going to come out of it. It's as simple as that. Chill also had an announcement on Friday, basically saying, you know, they're coming back to market hopefully in June, but they've basically got to wait for these auditors to finalize it. That's the thing that's holding
it takes a long time, doesn't it, that whole FCA process? I know that it's back.
No, this isn't the FCA. This is the auditors. It will go to the FCA. The FCA could be done in a day.
Okay.
Maybe it takes a week, but, you know, the auditors is the thing that's holding it up. So, again, Callum was describing a new business model that's coming from that, which again is very interesting. And yet we're looking forward to talking to him, but we can't talk to him until all of this is sorted out. I was also speaking with Jim at Celadon as well. And there's an AGM at the end of June. So he's looking to catch up with us as well next week, hopefully. What else? The other thing that's happening that the market is not responding to, and I'm really quite surprised, is the price of tungsten. Because the price of tungsten is going like vertical pretty much. And yet GMET hasn't responded at all to the increase in the price of tungsten. And also there was news today for Tungsten West. I don't know what impact that had on the share price or what the situation is there, but they said they needed X million, I think it was £93 million to restart the thing.
I'll tell you what impact it had. It had 5 trades, 3 buys, 2 sells, and they were for about £2,000 in total.
And did it go up or down?
No, it's flat, completely flat. It closed at 4.5 and it's sat in at, this is the previous day on Thursday, and on the morning of the news, it was just remained flat at 4.5.
So it depends what's interesting people, isn't it, at the minute? And it seems to be if you write Bitcoin or Treasury or anything else, then things are going to go up. So let's see what happens. Yeah.
I mean,
anything else to talk about?
Yeah. Energy Pathways had an RNS, just a kind of mesh update in the week, where they talked about this advanced concept engineering study and then this compressed air energy storage technology, this HCAS, into the MESH project, which aims to be one of, obviously, you know, Europe's largest long-duration energy storage facilities. And they're going to integrate with MESH, they're going to integrate this compressed air hydrogen and natural gas storage with a planned 400 megawatt dispatchable power capacity and storage potential of around 20 terawatt hours, which is like equivalent to, I think it's about 7% of the UK's annual electricity demand. So a little bit of an update on that one there. That seems to be just sitting away, bubbling away, doesn't it? Waiting for kind of licensing in, you know, rounds and things like that. But and if Greatland Gold also had an announcement on Friday, which was an update on the ASX listing, they'd lodged a replacement prospectus in respect of the proposed listing of Greatland Resources on the ASX and the offer of Greatland Resources shares, which was obviously described in the company's previous announcement on the 23rd of May. And that replacement prospectus replaces the prospectus lodged by Greatland Resources on the 23rd. And then they've basically just said that the expected timetable of the remaining principal events for the implementation of the ASX listing, the offer and scheme, remains as set out in the announcement made by Greatland on the 23rd, and it remains subject to change. So just a little bit of an update, basically just saying that the replacement prospectus on that. So that one looks to be sort of moving up quite nicely, doesn't it? Greatland Gold, another one of our kind of mentions, and
yeah, there's another one of our
14 and a half pence mark, something like that. I don't know what you make of that, but yeah, certainly bounced back well, hasn't it? Because it had a bit of a lull.
Yeah, it went down a bit there to sort of 12s, I think it was, and maybe even the 11s. And yeah, I think personally, when it goes in and lists in Australia, they're going to raise a bit of money, but very little. I think it's only sort of 2% of the market cap or whatever. And as Charles has said, compared to the other miners in Australia, it is cheap. So I can't see anything other than it's going to have a bounce, partly because the Australians are going to want to buy in. So as they buy in, you know, it's going to go up. I can't see anything but the 20s. I don't know about you, but I think it's going to go up.
Yeah. One of the shakers of the week was BMV, Bluebird Mining Ventures. They received disappointing news regarding the South Korean gold projects, with the Board of Audit and Inspection rejecting its case for a mountain temporary use permit and MTUP at Kochang, a decision the company plans to challenge through an administrative lawsuit expected to take 6 to 8 months. While Kochang and Gubong both hold valid mining rights, further progress is stalled due to regulatory hurdles and a lack of community support, particularly at Gubong. As a result, both joint ventures are suspended, though Bluebird retains full ownership and a low cost base. And the company is now planning to reassess its Korean strategy, shifting its primary focus to its more promising Philippines assets. And that was down 50% on that news. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the wider market? Obviously, we've seen FTSE 100 this week burst through back through all-time highs, you know, way above the, you know, obviously where it was before Trump's tariffs were announced back in March. You know, how do you see the performance of the, you know, the European markets? And the FTSE is currently trading 87.66, which I'm pretty sure is around the all-time highs. Dow's 42.215, S&P at 59.12, Nasdaq at 21.363, and then Nikkei at 38.433, and Hang Seng down a little bit. But, you know, what do you think of the wider markets right now?
Well, it's interesting that the US markets have recovered a lot of what they lost, but the rest of the markets have also started to happen. What I think has started to happen is that liquidity has started to leak into the UK market. There is people coming in, even things like the mask thing that we talked about. This is liquidity coming back in. It happened with, from what I can gather, SGL. It happened with Metals One. It's happening now with this. The number of CEOs I'm talking to who are in a situation that they're hoping to get finance is, you know, there's quite a few of them. So money is now becoming available. So if money becomes available, what does that mean? The liquidity starts to come back into the market, and the AIM market, the low small cap market in the UK, has been starved, or should I say, you know, they're basically thirsty for liquidity. I think once that liquidity really starts to get going, we will see some serious returns on some of the investments. Not everything, for sure. It's going to be specific to certain things. And I think this whole thing where we've seen 200, 300%, 2,000%, 4,000% on some of these, it creates more liquidity. Because the people who have just made 10 bags on something are going to take it out and probably start to invest it in something else. So, you know, I think liquidity brings liquidity. It's a snowball. That's what I see happening for the rest of this year. I don't see it slowing down.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's that Bitcoin theme right now. But you'll notice that there's always, you know, we've said it before, it's a constant moving target, isn't it? There'll be something that's in trend, something else will be in trend, then something else will be in trend. And all those want the stocks that are in those specific sectors, like people almost, it's not a bandwagon attempt, but it kind of is, because one company, we'll do treasury, you know, and then it ripples through and everyone's then looking, all the Telegram groups going, here's a list of all the companies that are doing the treasury, and people are putting together lists of potential companies to invest investing. So it definitely has a liquidity trap on it. But let's have a look at some of the commodities. I mean, we've got gold around 33.18 at the time of recording. Silver's at 33.285. Platinum's at £807. I mean, what do you make of some of the... And they're doing really well, some of these. You say tungsten's busting through, platinum, palladium's high.
They're going up anyway. And why are they going up? Ultimately, all those prices you've just quoted are in US dollars. Why? Because US dollar, in everybody's mind's eye now for the rest of the world, is being weakened. So therefore, you know, a higher US dollar price in those things is not a big surprise. I mean, there's still a discrepancy there when you've got silver 1 to 100 ratio in terms of the gold. And I don't see really gold sitting at 3.3 forever either. It's gonna move as far as I'm concerned. I think we'll see 3,500, you know, steady state maybe towards the end of the year. So where's silver going to go? I mean, it can't stay where it is in terms of 100 times, in my view. But yeah, we've been saying that for quite a while. The same with the dollar. I mean, the dollar has come down from its high of, I think it was 1.8 to 1.10 in terms of the ratio, and now it's down around 100 or just below. Will it break out down again? I don't know, but we will find out. These money movements don't happen instantaneously, you know, especially the big money. They make decisions, and then slowly but surely, then the things move over weeks and months and years. But yeah, it's moving. I can feel it rather than see it. It's moving. The most important thing is capital goes to the place where it feels that it's going to get the returns. The US market right now just feels toppy. It's like, am I going to get like 20-30% in the US market? You know, is the S&P going to go to 6,000 or 7,000 or 7,000 or more? Doesn't look like it, does it? Whereas, can the FTSE go to 10,000? In my view, yes. You know, can AIM stocks double in a day? Yes. You know, we're back at that stage, but at the minute it's only selective. I think when we move and we start to look at, and obviously we've been covering a lot of resource-based stocks, when we start to move into some of those, they will be news dependent, as in, you know, they've done X, Y, Z. But when they do, I'm hopeful then they're going to start being rewarded for that, and actually they'll be playing catch up because the valuations are extremely low, you know, and the rest of the world knows that. That's why somebody came in and put the money in MAST, because the valuation was extremely low and they know they can make money out of that.
Yeah. Be interesting to see, you know, Reeves, as we've talked about this in the past, about Reeves doing away or reducing the amount that one can put into, you know, sort of ISAs, stocks and shares, ISAs sort of thing, but you're potentially reducing it from the £20,000 annual limit to 4,000 to try and entice people away from cash ISAs and into stocks and shares ISAs. So, you know, which would actually bring a lot more liquidity into, you know, obviously you'd have ETFs in there, you'd have potential pension funds or whatever it is. But ultimately, people would be able to take their own decision, you know, like a SIP, and do an investment into a stocks and shares ISA. And that would bring a lot. That would encourage investment in the UK. And it has to be invested in the UK stock exchange. You know, that would be a good thing to do. I think I'm not opposed to it, really.
No, I'd be getting the flags out if they did that. I think, you know, for me, we've said this before on podcasts, if you have a UK citizen and they're getting tax advantages from the United Kingdom government, and the United Kingdom government says, you can invest it anywhere in the world. And the fact of the matter is you don't have to invest it in United Kingdom. Then to me, that is mental. Like that, you know, most other countries do not do that. There is a necessity that you invest at least some in your own nation. You know, can you imagine the Chinese saying, you get a tax break here and you can invest it anywhere? There's no possibility that that would happen. In Australia, it's the same thing. You get your tax credits if you invest in Australian companies, and the franked Australian companies in that situation. So it doesn't make any sense. We're giving our investment and money to the rest of the world and not worrying about the UK. That will not create growth in the UK. That it's just mental. It doesn't make any sense.
100%. TV. more important things to talk
Hey,
about.
I've got a
What
bone
do you
to
think
pick
of
with
Mob?
you.
What, no, what do you think of Mobland?
I binge watched the whole of Mobland, so
Right.
now I'm up to nine, and I was mentally scarred by it. Yeah,
I told you it was pretty brutal, mate.
it's great, it's brilliant. I was very sad that there was only eight episodes or nine. It was really great. What's your man's name? Who's the main actor?
Tom Hardy is the main
Tom
man.
Hardy's brilliant,
Yeah.
like brilliant. He's a
Yeah.
brilliant actor. And who's the old guy?
Pierce Brosnan with his worst Irish accent ever.
Pierce Brosnan. Now, to be honest, he's a hell of a character, isn't he? In that particular Mobland. So, if you haven't watched Mobland, I'm not recommending it because it's going to blow your brains out, literally, like they blow everybody's brains out.
Yeah.
But it is quite a story. Yeah, I don't. How many episodes are there going to be?
I think there's 10, but I mean we're nearly at the end of it, but I think they've already said they're going to commission it for a second series, see second season. But I mean, I think I'm up to the same point as you, because I watch it's released every Sunday in the UK. So obviously we get the release, and then we have to wait a week and get, it's on Paramount. So I think I'm pretty much, yeah, I am caught up. I think the last two episodes have been for me a little bit long wind, a little bit kind of strung out and a bit dull compared to the sort of first three or four, maybe five. When it starts getting a bit interesting. But yeah, let's see how it ends, because it could be on a real cliffhanger. But yeah, man,
So
if you
what you
love you
reckon this week is the last one, the 10th one?
yeah, I think the 10th, I mean it might be 12, I don't know. I don't know. I just check that maybe now. But ultimately it's been very good. That Code of Silence has been really, really good as well, which is the one with the sign language and the lip reading with Rose from she was previously in EastEnders, and she was actually a winner of Strictly Come Dancing. But that's been very good. That's on ITVX, so I'd recommend that one if you like your sort of gritty crime dramas. But other than that, there's been a new series on Netflix, which is Sirens with Julianne Moore, which is it's all right. I mean, it's a bit kind of Stepford Wivesy, but it's starting to get interesting. But other than that, yeah, I've been listening to a few podcasts. Yeah, other than that, Kevin, anything else you want to mention?
No, not really. I started reading a book which I've read about six or seven times, which is well worth a read if you fancy it. It is a Christian-based book, but it's called, let me tell you now, When the Game Is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box.
Right. When the game is over, it goes back in. Okay.
It's a very, very good book, especially if you're involved with money, investing, because it's all about what we should do from a Christian perspective, I have to say. So if you're not interested in that, don't read it.
Yeah.
But
Okay.
so I read this, I've read it about seven times now. I read it most years.
Okay.
It's very good.
I'll have a look for that one. Formula One Grand Prix, Monaco. I don't know if you saw it, but Lando Norris won. McLaren absolutely smashing it. Obviously, Piastri as well. He came in third. And then Leclerc, the Frenchman at home. Was he going to win it? It was a shame he didn't in a way. But yeah, very, very interesting race.
Well,
We've
I
got.
have to argue with you there. It wasn't an interesting race at
No.
all, because whether you like it or
Do you
not.
know how they made it interesting, though? The only
No, I
way that
do
they.
with the two pit stops, but
Yeah.
the scenario was that there's just not enough overtaking at
Yeah,
Monaco. You
can't
can't
overtake. There's no, the
cars
cars are too
overtake.
big. Cars are too big. That's the problem.
So it sort of defeats the object. I mean, the fact that they had to say you had to have two pit stops. I mean,
Yeah.
if they didn't have to have two pit stops, Verstappen would have won.
Yeah.
And he
Well,
didn't have to pass this car.
he tried to time it right and hope for a red flag incident, didn't he? Basically, that's what
Yeah.
he was hoping for, which was, was wishful thinking. But yeah, I mean, what do you make of, Hamilton got his fifth position. He moved up from the seventh on the grid. But what do you make of Ferrari's performance so far, and Hamilton, the pressure on Hamilton? Leclerc obviously smashed it with his second, got a podium finish. But are you a bit disappointed with Hamilton and Ferrari? Do you feel like he's just getting to grips with a car that doesn't sort of he just doesn't seem to be able to push it in the way he could?
Ferrari's breakdown, doesn't it? As we learned a few weekends ago, Ferraris are just unreliable machines, aren't they? So I'm not really that surprised, but it is what it is, you know. I think when you look at Formula One, if you put them on a decent track that you can overtake, then the McLarens are miles ahead, no? Right now.
Oh, yeah. Performance and
In
handling wise,
performance,
once
they're
they get
miles
clean,
ahead.
yeah.
You know, Verstappen's only staying there because he is a superior driver. Hamilton is a superior driver, but he's getting older, let's be honest, and must be reaction times are going down and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's exciting when there's lots of overtaking, and they've got to start
Oh, yeah. I mean,
making sure.
Monaco's always been edgy, but the problem, as you say, is the cars are so big now, and they're actually reduced for next season. They're reducing the size, the footprint of the car. When you stand next to a modern Formula One car, they're just too big. Simple as that. Next race is Barcelona, the Spanish Grand Prix. Be interesting to see what happens. You know, obviously, we're going to have the practice on Friday, then the free practice Saturday, and then obviously the qualifying in the afternoon. So, yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. But Piastri's leading right now, isn't he, in terms of the driver's points? It's only a few points in it from what I can see. But, yeah, it'd be very interesting to see what is actually going to happen, you know, in the coming
And
week.
we're, by the time you listen to this, you'll know who's won the Champions League, whether it's PSG or Inter Milan, Internazionale. So, who do you want to win, Phil?
Who do I want to win? I'd like Milano to win, but I think PSG will win it. And it's the first Champions League final since 2004 without a team from England, Spain, or Germany.
I would like PSG to win. Mainly because I think they've been the best team, and secondly, because they basically beat all the British teams. They beat Liverpool, then they went on and beat Villa, then they went on and beat Arsenal. So, yeah. We've got the basketball as well. I've been keeping tabs with the NBA. Basically, we've got Minnesota Timberwolves versus Oklahoma City. That one's finished now. Oklahoma through to the final. We've got the Indiana Pacers and New York Knicks. I think that's happening tonight or tomorrow. But basically, the Knicks are trailing, I think. So, yeah, we'll see who's in the final against OKC. But it's been entertaining. It's some show they put on every time they do it, I tell you. It really
Yeah, I
is.
do like, I must admit, out of all the American sports, when I tend to go to the US, I can't get into baseball, just way too long-winded, just seems dull to me. American football, never going to say that I'd understand that game in a million years, to be honest. But the basketball, I love it when they run the clock down and they've got the final seconds. It's amazing. Like, you think there's no way that they could win these, but the games can be turned and won in the last 10 seconds on the clock, you know, when they have all the timeouts. And I find it fascinating, the basketball.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating towards the end of the games, isn't it? How the teams can come back into it and do that.
Especially the
But
college basket. I thought the college basketball was almost more exciting than the NBA a lot of the time when I used to watch the college stuff.
yeah. Well, I think the Knicks, just looking at it now, I think the Knicks won against Indiana Thursday night, which then probably took it to 3-2. So they're going into game six then over the weekend. So obviously the Knicks need to win, otherwise they will not go through. But I mean, that's going to be some game in New York at the Garden. So yeah,
Okay.
should be interesting.
Very good. Well,
What are you looking forward to stock wise for next week? Let's say what we think.
I think it'd be interesting to see what happens. You know, obviously priority. Let's see what happens there. Then obviously Mast has had a really good, as you said, you know, one of your picks that's done extremely well. And as we're recording this, it's around the 0.92 mark. It did hit slightly higher on Friday morning, but it'd be interesting to see whether that one can break through into the ones, the one and a halves, the twos. Because as you say, you know, with these investors on board now, and the chat we had with Peter, it does sound like they're you know, it's very exciting times for them to build, you know, towards their portfolio of the 300 megawatts.
Yeah, I think that's one to watch certainly over the next number of months. I still think there's some mileage in that. I think priority is going to have its results as well coming out. So that's one to watch as well. We should have some news on Celadon as well. So there's something coming there as well because it's bang or bust, I think, in terms of the financing that's required. So there's going to be action going on there, I think. What else? GMET's got to happen sooner or later. Guardian Metal Resources, as in the US government's got to come through with a grant, and or you're in a situation where tungsten is flying and yet the share price hasn't appreciated, which is bizarre. So yeah, there's a few catalysts coming. over the next few weeks and months. So let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, if you like what you heard, please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for any further notifications of future episodes, and have a great weekend or what's left of it.
Yeah, enjoy.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.